So, committee of the whole will come back to order. Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Proceed.
All right. Brothers and sisters, a distinct honor. I have a good friend in the South Gallery down here from Washakie County. And as you all know, that's 2-0 on your license plates, second to none. This is a good friend, Gary Gilmore. Yeah, he's a director out to Wyoming Boys School down to watch what we're doing.
Welcome to the house. Anyone else? Okay, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 104. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 104, as introduced by Senator Coe, an act relating to government administration, establishing the position of Director of the Department of Education by statute, providing duties of the Director of the Department of Education, transferring duties from the State Superintendent to the Director of the State Department of Education, requiring reporting, providing for transition, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 104, engrossed, Education State Administration respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, and Wallace, it is signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 104 do pass, and I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good co-sponsor, the Chairman of House Education, Chairman Teeters.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to provide some brief rationale for the bill, and then I will provide you with a summary of Senate File 104 as it is engrossed, and then we will have some discussion. Education is growing more complex and technical with each passing day. The complexity of the work and the many burdens warrant and require an analysis of the governance structure for our education system. From the inception of the current statutory structure of our education system in Wyoming, there has been an inherent tension between the board, the department, and the legislature. This tension was noted as far back as 1985 in a legislative management audit and as recently as 2006 by an additional management audit. It has been this tension that has served over the course of history to create a somewhat unstable environment for the operation of education in the state of Wyoming and the administration of laws enacted by this legislature. The current effort of the Wyoming legislature in matters related to education accountability in assessment require the cooperation and subject matter knowledge and experience to ensure legislative mandates are carried out in a thoughtful and deliberate manner, and most importantly, in accordance with our laws in Title 21. Stabilization is the objective review, and the objective review of allocation of education duties is necessary as we move forward with this very important work. Oversight of education is the charge of this legislature. The public deserves an agency and an education system that is responsive to its wishes and allows for the continuous improvement of our children and their education. It is our belief, the sponsors of the bill, that this concept proposed in Senate File 104 will serve to stabilize the operation of education in the state and provide the public and education community with the necessary support to carry laws enacted out by this legislature. Senate File 104 establishes a director of the State Department of Education to serve at the pleasure of the governor at a salary determined by the governor, appointed by the governor with three nominations that are submitted by the state board. It delegates existing and specific duties to the state superintendent to the director in prime areas that include assessment, school finance, accountability, education data, and federal programs. It maintains the general supervision of public schools with the state superintendent as prescribed by law. It requires the state superintendent to report to the legislature on the general status of our public schools. It provides for an immediate transition by setting up an interim director for the department by transition to plan for an immediate transfer. The transfers will include all programs, property, appropriations, and functions. It also transitions contracts and other agreements and obligations that are assumed by the director. Policy in effect at the time of transition will remain in effect until amended or rescinded by the director. There will be periodic reporting of the transfer status by the interim director to the Joint Education Committee. The Department of Administration and Information is tasked with reviewing all WDE authorized positions and appropriation funds and submitting a list to the governor by November 1, 2013 of all positions and funds providing services related to the duties that are transferred to the director. By listing and identifying sources of positions and funding and determining the impact on funding sources and positions that are not wholly funded by the state general fund. The Department of Administration and Information will review and develop a list parsing out the positions and funding remaining with the state superintendent. The Joint Appropriations Committee will review those position lists provided the governor and the forward necessary funding in the budget modifications and to effectuate the transfer through the 2014 budget bill. There will be a status report on the transfer due to the governor, the Joint Education Committee, the Joint Appropriation Committee, and the Select Committee on Accountability by December 1, 2013. The state superintendent is required to submit a budget for the biennium commencing July 1st for positions and funds determined by ANI to remain with the state superintendent's function. There was a $500,000 appropriation for transition that was removed by the Senate. The body across the hall also added qualifications for the new director, and you'll find that on page 2, lines 7 through 17, including education requirements and experience requirements. On page 7, line 11, they expanded the annual report, requiring the state superintendent to include quality of education indicators. It also increased the duties assigned, the body across the hall also increased the duties assigned to the state superintendent, including a voting member of the state board, ex officio member of the school facilities commission, the PTSB appointments, the seclusion and restraints laws, the storage of toxic material, charter schools, accepting financing, the boundary board, and innovative education advisory council. Those were the responsibilities that were transferred back through the Senate's action. At this point in time, I will stand for questions.
Is there any questions or remarks on the bill?
Representative Gagy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I stand here with a little bit of uneasy feeling right now. I see the names of the people that are on this bill. There's some people that I've served with for a long time, have a lot of respect for. The good chair and I came in together. We served on education for 4 years together. As we have been thinking about this bill and what's going on, even on our yellow sheet today, what I want to say is we got told today that here's the schedule of the bills, and then all of a sudden 104 comes up. I was watching one of the television channels last night, and the reporter said he's never seen a bill get fast-tracked like this bill has been from the Senate to the House. Folks, I just feel a little bad about that. I just don't think we've heard from people. This bill is not a committee bill, and yet it has ramifications that affect this state for a long time. So some individuals came up with this bill. It didn't even go through the committee
the people on the committee are on the bill, but this is an individual bill. And it just seems like it's going pretty fast. Why is it going so fast? Why is it coming through so fast? Why don't we have a little more time? Why don't we get more of the citizens of Wyoming to tell us what they're really thinking? Our emails are lots and lots and lots, as everybody is. And I just don't think that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. I think this is just moving so fastly, and as it moves so fast, I'm not sure that's a good perception for this body. Are we here to serve people, or are we here to just, poof, here's what we think is best, and we'll just do it? I'm feeling pretty bad about that. I think that's the perception that I think a lot of people are in Wyoming are having. And I would feel so much better if we'd have run it through the normal process. It would have been vetted and crossover. Here we have. Everybody has a chance to contemplate, look, hear, listen. Look at the constitutionality. That has been on one side. It's definitely constitutional. We have the right to do this. And yet on the other side, it's not constitution. And the Attorney General's weighed in on it. And the perception of this is not good for the state of Wyoming and the people that we represent in our districts. I think we are taking the rights away from people. And I just do not like what we're doing. That's what I said. I just feel very bad. I hear things about the federal government. They kind of do this and they ram it down. And why in the world aren't they listening to us? Well, folks, I think the perception of what we're doing here today and what's been done on the other side is exactly the opposite of what we would like to stand for in the state of Wyoming and people's involvement. So I think everybody in here has been lobbied until you can't be lobbied anymore. Only thing I would ask is you stand on your own principles. Don't listen, don't hear, don't let somebody else tell you what is right. Do what your constituents want you to do. I think what we came down here to do, and as we vote on this, as there'll be amendments coming up on second reading, third reading, I just want you to look inside your heart, listen to your constituents, and vote whichever way you feel inside. That's the way to vote. And of course, from my comments, you can tell which way I'm going to vote. I'm just feeling bad. Probably have some more things to say later, but thank you.
Representative Piperine.
Mr. Chairman and fellow members of the 62nd legislature. Sorry. Different men often see the same subject in different lights. And I hope that it does not seem disrespectful to those gentlemen if entertaining, as I do, opinions of a character very opposite to theirs. A few weeks ago, as legislators, we raised our arms to the square and were sworn to support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Wyoming. We went on to commit to discharge the duties of our offices with fidelity. In being faithful to that pledge, as I understand it and as I interpret it, I'd like to speak on and against Senate File 104. I believe that governments were instituted of God for the benefit of man, and that he holds man accountable for their actions in relation to them, both in making the laws and administering them for the good and safety of society. It is because of that belief and that accountability that I raise a warning voice regarding the constitutional concerns many people in the state of Wyoming have regarding what is now unfolding before us. My fellow legislators, I believe this is a constitutional crisis. To me and to many, our Wyoming Constitution clearly states, "There shall be chosen by the qualified electors of the state, at times and places of choosing members of the legislature, a secretary of state, an auditor, treasurer, and superintendent of public instruction. They shall severally hold their offices at the seat of government for a term of 4 years and until their successors are elected and duly qualified." It goes on to say that the legislature may provide for such other officers as are deemed necessary, but it does not give them the power to negate or nullify these constitutional offices or the powers which are historically inherent in them. These powers rest with the people through constitutional consent and processes. Our Constitution states that all power is inherent in the people, and it is they who have the indefeasible right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such a manner as they see proper, not the legislature, not the governor. I have been inundated with an influx of emphatic emails on this issue. These emails, along with a host of other communications, have overwhelmingly indicated a great disappointment in the direction that is being pursued in bringing about a resolution to this matter. In the general election of 2010, the will of the people was strongly heard regarding this office of public instruction. This legislature mustn't be too quick to discount the decision of this very discernible and democratically derived dictate of the people. As an observer of the way this has all unfolded, I concur with the sage who wrote, "We have learned by sad experience that it's in the nature and disposition of almost all men that as soon as they get a little authority, as they suppose, they will immediately begin to exercise unrighteous dominion. If changes need to be made to this office, let us do them appropriately, transparently, and in a manner prescribed by our Constitution, reflecting the will of the people whose representatives we are. I respectfully urge a nay vote on this bill."
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me start just with the Constitution part. We talked about Article 7, Sections 14, but I think it's important for us to read it and to understand it. There's two clauses to it. "The general supervision of the public schools shall be entrusted to the state superintendent of public instruction." That's the first clause. Second clause is, "whose powers and duties shall be prescribed by law." That's the constitutional provision that everybody's talking about. Constitutional construction shows us that we have to look at it in a whole. You're not just allowed to look at one clause. You have to look at it all together. I would agree that The legislature has the power to add duties and to delete duties from the state superintendent. The difficulty is that's not what we're doing here in this bill. We're removing almost every single duty possible. With a few exceptions, she gets to keep toxic material. I'm not sure if that's toxic material just in schools or the whole state. But that's the one thing, and I think she got to keep two or three other things. But she didn't get to keep a lot. So you have to look back and look at the first clause that says, the general supervision of the public schools shall be entrusted. The general supervision. Well, how in the world is she going to do general supervision if she has no abilities to do that? She has no duties. We took them all away from her. So, yes, the legislature can take duties away, but I think we're going to run into a constitutional problem, and I think they're going to have a very successful argument on the other side that, legislature, you overstepped your bounds. You went too far. Now, the governor's going to have to defend this through his attorney general, and this will take, 2 years, maybe more. They're going to have to fight this out in the courts. This idea that this somehow is going to resolve everything, all this is doing is starting it up. This is just getting things going. This is going to play into the next election cycle. This will play into the court system. This will go on and on. The better way that we could have done this, and what I regret that we didn't do, is there were some compromises here. There was the ability to possibly sit down and say, okay, there are some duties that maybe we need to transfer, and see if the state superintendent would say, yeah, that sounds right, let's transfer those ones over, that type of thing. For example, we could have done, and people talked about this and tried to run it by some of the people, having a director of assessment or director of testing. I mean, that testing is what this is all about, that we want a lot of testing. I want to test, want to increase the testing. So let's have a director of testing. And that director can be under the governor, and the governor can be all in charge of testing. And let the state superintendent keep working on education. The other thing, just to point out, is that there was a proper way to do this. And the proper way was to get a constitutional amendment. You go before the voters and you say, hey, there's this provision in the Constitution. It says the state superintendent has the general supervision of our public schools. We don't think that should be in there anymore. Let's take it out. And then the voters would have voted and said, yeah, we agree with you. Let's take that out of there. It's also important when we're talking about the Constitution, and I know I'm probably in the minority here, but I'm an originalist. I believe that you look at a Constitution as the founding fathers intended it. And I know the people that are pushing this, have this strong belief this is a living document, we move with it, and, it changes with the times and goes with the flow. I don't believe that. I believe you go and you look at what the founding fathers said that they were doing. And what you do, and this is really nice that someone put this together, but some of you have seen it, but they went back and found the debate in the constitutional debates for our Wyoming Constitution, and they actually discussed this. They discussed, should we put education under the governor? And this Mr. Brown, who was probably lost to history, but he was a delegate to our Wyoming State Constitution Convention, he said, no, we don't want to put this in the control of the hands of the governor. They made it very clear they wanted to do it this way. That's what the Constitutional Convention was saying. They made it very clear they wanted this to stay with the state superintendent. They did not want to congregate power into one individual, the governor, which we're doing here. We're congregating the power into one man. The other thing you have to do is go back and look at our Constitution. Our Constitution in 1890, and you have to look at what other constitutions were being formed at that same time. There's actually a grouping, and you can go through, and there's a group of the original 13, their constitutions, and then you look in the 1820s, there's some states that join, and over time you see states that were coming into the Union about the same time, they copy each other. So a lot of our constitution is very similar to about six other states that came into the Union all at the same time. They're all very similar when you pick up their constitutions, and they're all very much written a lot like ours. Because what they were really worried about in the 1890s was corruption. Now, that was a big deal in the 1890s, corruption. That if you put something in one person, that was a bad thing. And they were trying to diffuse things out. They were trying to have separation. And you discover that when you look at our county government. People always saying, boy, our county governments are sort of odd. Why don't we just, you know, have professionals doing it? Why do we elect these people? We should just go out and get professionals from out of state that can come run our counties for us. Why do we elect? You know, why on a warrant, which is a check from a county, are there three signatures? The treasurer's signature, the clerk's signature, and the chairman of the county commissioner. Well, the clerk writes the check, you know, issues it. The commissioners look at it and make sure that that's what they authorize. And then the treasurer looks at it to make sure there's actually money in the account. So three signatures. Seems like an antiquated system, but it worked so well because what they were trying to do was get at corruption. They were trying to make sure that all these different elected officials were watching each other. Why do we elect a clerk of the district court? And that's always the one people are always fascinated with. You know, why and what would you elect a clerk of the district court? They were worried about the powers of a district court judge, and they wanted to have a clerk of the district court that was elected by the people that could balance his powers. And you see that throughout. You know, why does the coroner have the power to arrest the sheriff? They wanted to make sure the sheriff didn't get too powerful, that there was always one official, and it's always a funny one to me, that the coroner can come arrest the sheriff if he needs to. It's that type of thinking that was going on in the 1890s. This was our Constitution. This was the idea that you balance power amongst different elected officials. The idea that suddenly we come in now and change that, but not through the Constitution. We're just going to change it. That we're the legislature. We're just going to do it. You know, we wouldn't have brought the bill on doing the judicial retirement age if I thought we could just do that and just ignore the Constitution. But no, we said, no, you know, we don't like that in the Constitution. Brought you a constitutional amendment. Potentially it'll go to the voters. The last issue I was just going to mention, just because it's out there, and not actually sure it's a very good argument, but there's this issue of emolument. Emolument is the concept that you can't change. Once somebody's elected, you can't change duties until after their term has ended. The concept being that you and I here in this body, we can't vote to give ourselves a raise for tomorrow. Like, starting tomorrow, we all make $5 more. We could vote for it, but it would have to take effect our next election cycle. So that's very clear with the money part. The part that I'm not real clear on, and I think something we need to investigate more, and I'm sure it'll come out in these court cases that will be going on over the next 2 years, is can you change somebody's duties? So let's just use the governor, for example. Let's say we were mad at the governor today, or we were mad at the treasurer, and we just decided, you know what, governor, you no longer have the power of granting a pardon. For an example, we just decide, you know, governor, we think you're granting way too many pardons. We're going to take that away from you. Does that power, that revision, that taking back of power, is that immediate, or do we have to wait for the next person to get into office? And that's just a question I'm not sure on. In this example, so you're going to take away all of her duties, other than toxic materials. You're going to take away all of her duties. Does that immediate, or does that take effect when whoever runs for it next year gets elected and takes office in 2015. That would be my other concern. My biggest argument against this bill is just simply, this isn't the way to do it. The way to do it is do a constitutional amendment, and we move from there. And I get the argument why you can't do a constitutional amendment, because you have to do constitutional amendments in a general election. So what's going to happen is, so let's say we did that bill today, 2014 is the earliest that could be on the ballot. Whoever's going to run for the office, because we're getting rid of it yet, somebody might run for it. You know, it's just going to be a ceremonial spot, but somebody might like that. Whoever runs for it and gets elected, you can't, and let's say the voters say, yes, we'd like to get rid of it. You can't get rid of it. That one's pretty clear until that person has served out their term. So the earliest you could get rid of them is, well, 2018. So I get that. I get why people don't want to do it. And I know that sometimes the Constitution gets in the way. And that's been the hardest thing. Everybody keeps going, well, the Constitution, Keith, you know, it can be interpreted. Really, it can't. Sometimes the Constitution's clear. You know, this isn't rocket science. You can read it yourself. You know, read the sentence. The sentence says, very clearly, The general supervision of the public schools shall be entrusted to the state superintendent of public instruction. I don't know how else to interpret that. Anyway, I leave it at that, and I'd urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Representative Paxton.
Mr. Chairman, on and against Senate File 104, keeping with the spirit of Cowboy Code of Ethics to talk less and say more, my remarks will be very brief. It appears that Senate File 104 was born out of frustration because of the disconnect between the legislative intent and the implementation of that intent by the State Department of Education. I believe this bill is an attempt to bridge that gap, but I believe that it is a bridge too far. Because of the enormous implications of this bill, it is an issue that should be brought before the people in the form of a constitutional amendment on and against Senate File 104.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the interest of brevity, I'll simply say that I want to echo the sentiments of most of the previous people who have risen to speak. I also rise on and against Senate File 104. And I want to read you an excerpt from a definition that I just got off of my computer. A republic is a form of government in which the country or state is a public matter, with public in quotes, not the private concern or property of elected rulers, and where offices of state are directly or indirectly elected or appointed rather than inherited. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 104 is probably the least supportive of a republic of any file or bill I've seen come across in recent history on and against.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As all of you know, I am a co-sponsor on this bill, and so obviously I rise in support of the legislation. And my support for this legislation is difficult. It's a difficult question. It's a major piece of legislation. But I am a sponsor on that bill after 2 years of being on your select committee on educational accountability, where we have made every effort to resolve this issue. This is not a precipitous decision to file this bill and to be a co-sponsor on this bill. This is a two-year process, and unfortunately, it's come to a decision where, looking at the last 10 years of history, we know we need some major restructuring. But my primary purpose in coming to the mic today is actually to address the questions of constitutionality. It's unfortunate that the headlines blazing across our papers for the last couple of weeks say this is a bill to strip the superintendent of her powers, and we've all received a lot of email questioning the constitutionality. But this is a bill about the Department of Education. The Department of Education was created by the legislature, not the Constitution. It's a legislative creation. It's not an inherent power under the Constitution of the superintendent to have a Department of Education. She's not entitled under the Constitution to have a Department of Education. We create the Department of, we being the legislature, create the Department of Education. It's a legislative creation. And the good chairman of Judiciary gave us a little history, and I'm going to give a little more history. The good chairman quoted Article 7, Section 14 of the Constitution. It does have two pieces. The second piece is the superintendent has those responsibilities assigned by law. We are the legislative branch. We write the law. The Department of Education, the original Department of Education, was not created in 1890. It was not created for many years after the adoption of our Constitution. The Department of Education was a legislative creation in 1917. And just a little personal aside here, you know, in Wyoming, our founding parents, as I like to call them, not founding fathers, founding parents, although there were no women at the Constitutional Convention that I'm aware of, but I'm sure they were influenced by the women in their lives. They had a very progressive idea about education, a very progressive idea for a rural frontier state, that all the children in Wyoming were entitled to education, and that it's a fundamental right, and that public education is the hallmark of our system. And if you read the annals of the Constitutional Convention, you'll see how important that was. Well, you fast forward to 1917, and this is just a little bit of my personal family history. 1917 is when both sets of my grandparents homesteaded in a county in the north. And the family lore is that my mother's family, which came from Georgia, came to Wyoming for the schools. Because my grandfather heard that Wyoming had good schools, and he had five kids, and he had five more kids after he got here. And he came to Wyoming for the schools. So our commitment to education is founded in our history and something we can be proud of. But in 1917, the legislature created the Department of Education. And I'm just going to read you a couple sentences from the 1917 enactment. The general supervision of public schools shall be entrusted to a state Department of Education, at the head of which will be, or shall be, a state board of education. The original Department of Education created by the legislature was not put under the superintendent. It was put under the State Board of Education, which was also a legislative creation. In 1919, the State Department of Education moved back, or didn't move back, it was moved to the superintendent, but there was also a commissioner of education. And the commissioner of education actually reported primarily to the State Board of Education. And none of these features early in our history were ever found to be unconstitutional. It was just how the structure was organized. And it was created by the legislature, and it was constitutional. Because agencies are created by the legislature. We created the Department of Health, the Department of Environmental Quality, and other assorted agencies. Periodically, we restructure them, as we did 2 years ago when we put Workforce Services and the Department of Employment together again. This is a bill about the Department of Education. So then you fast forward to I believe in 1959, this commissioner position went away. And then roughly in 1969, the Department of Education, sort of as we know it today, came into being. And that department has been given increasingly more and more responsibility. Yet we still have this divided system, which has been in our statutes, of the State Board of Education being responsible for developing content standards, developing the tests that were part of our original school reform effort in the late 90s before I was here. It's always been a multifaceted system. And it's unfortunate that the headlines have gotten ahead of the facts. Because the facts are we are talking about the Department of Education. And the Department of Education, whether it's headed by the Superintendent of Public Instruction or a director or the State Board, only has the powers granted to it by law by this body. And that Department of Education, whoever is in charge, is obligated to execute the laws that we pass. And that's the basic constitutional structure. Now, in terms of a potential constitutional challenge, if Senate File 104 becomes law, I think it's important for the body to remember that laws enacted are presumed constitutional. Anyone challenging the law would have a high burden to meet, particularly in light of this history and the light of Supreme Court precedent in all the school finance cases that talks about the legislature having control of the educational system. So if Senate File 104 is enacted, it enjoys a presumption of constitutionality, and it would not lead, even if challenged, would not lead, in my opinion, to 2 years of disruption unless someone was successful in enjoining the law. Once the law is passed, it's in effect. It enjoys a presumption of constitutionality. And if someone challenges it, the law remains in effect pending the challenge. I think everyone needs to understand that there's not going to be this parade of horribles of disruption. But again, the constitutional argument does not have merit, in my opinion, because the Department of Education was created by the legislature. The legislature defines its duties, and it can define how it's run. We did it in 1917, and we can do it in 2013. It's all about the best delivery of this wonderful system of public education envisioned by the people who came here in the 1870s and the 1880s and wrote a truly magnificent constitution. It's all about making the system work, and that's our job. If the system that we've designed and enacted in our laws is not functioning, we have to fix it. And that's the role of the legislature. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking in support of the Senate File 104, and in adding to what the previous speaker brought to your attention, I too can read the Constitution as we all can. And I think that we are on very solid constitutional ground here, considering that it clearly says that the legislature is to provide for public schools. The legislature shall provide for the establishment and maintenance of a complete and uniform system of public instruction. And the fact that the Supreme Court has in numerous occasions basically stated that these and other constitutional expressions should leave no doubt that the legislature has complete control of the state school system in every respect. That's our responsibility. That's our job to make sure that system is in place and operating the way that we, the only policymakers in the three branches of government, can do. Secondly, I want to bring to your attention the fact that this is not an unprecedented action. In fact, in 1988, there was a report, the Ferrari report, which was talking about efficiencies in government. And in 1989, there was action taken in regards to the state auditor. And at that time, the Department of Audit was established just as in a similar fashion to what we are contemplating doing now. The Department of Audit is under the governor. Director is appointed by the governor. There were many positions and duties that were shuffled around at that time. Some positions were taken from the state auditor's office and put under the Department of Audit. Some of the duties and responsibilities, they took on different configurations at that time. And then following that, in 1991, this body passed a whole set of measures in a sort of a reorganization of government effort at that time. So we've done this before in dealing with a state elected official who still exists and has different duties, and a department that is under the executive department. So what we're doing here is not something completely unprecedented in history. We've done it before, and it's our responsibility to make sure that we're our responsibility and no one else's to make sure that this system is in place.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Friends, there's a million things that we could talk about regarding this bill and the issues that are associated with it. I think I'd like to talk about three. Our job together regarding education. Second, my experience on education, on the Education Committee. I'm beginning my fifth year. The experience of others. And then to bring it back to our collective responsibility. Friends, I know that for all of us, the education of our children is vital to our family, is vital to us as individuals, to our families, to our communities, and to the state. There could be nothing more important. And for all of us who go door to door and meet with constituents, I am confident that every other door, you are talking to someone about education and how important it is, and what your job will be, what they want you to do, the message that you will take here, and then what you will do with it. I think we all recognize how important education it is and how it's our collective responsibility to respond to the needs and the will of the people regarding it. And we have. I mean, we've just heard speakers talk about the constitutional mandate regarding education for us. We've heard some about our court decisions, the Washakie and the Fort Campbell decisions, that have made absolutely clear that it is the legislative duty to respond to the needs of education in the state. But we as a body, and a historical body, have set up what we're going to do. And there are so many of us in this body responsible for education. We have a joint education committee. We've got a select committee on school facilities. We have a select accountability committee. We've had a select committee on the recalibration for school finances. All right. We all serve in some way regarding education, and we as a body have decided to put our collective resources into considering those issues about education because we find them so crucial and so important. So my second point is to talk about my experiences serving on education and now going on to my fifth year. And one of the things that has struck me, and honestly it just struck me our first week of the session, is somewhat a significant difference between serving on that committee and the two other committees that I've served on. For my first 4 years here, I've served on education, and then I served on TRW, and now I serve on judiciary. On TRW, we have four agencies that report to us, two of which report regularly. The other two are smaller agencies. And it occurred to me, and somebody had called it the fur and feathers, that committee. I know the director, the associate director, and if I want to know about any fish or fowl, if I want to know about law enforcement as it's related to that agency, I know or can call the agency head and have the director of that division at the table to talk about those bills. Every single one of those bills that in any way is the agency needs to address, we have at the table the director and we have the agency head. In the new committee that I serve on judiciary, for the first week, the good chairman introduced us to every agency head that was there and the division director and said, this person will be appearing before you. Here's the agency head. Here's the division director. So that we knew who did child enforcement, who was the AG, who were the AG's folks. We were introduced to them. Okay? That's the way it should work. When any of us has a bill, when any issue is being discussed, we want to sit down at the table with the agency and hash it out. Make sure that we're doing best by the citizens of the state. There's a difference on the Education Committee. Rarely has the Superintendent of Public Education attended Education Committee meetings. Rarely has a division head attended an Education Committee meeting in my 4 years. I don't know who to call. I am passionate about issues of education. Rarely do I know who to call in that department when I have a question or a concern, when I want to work on a bill. I don't know that person. I have 4 feet of information about education, but I don't know who to call. That's the difference between working on that committee and working on the other committees that I serve on. That to me is a major warning bell. We all know education is so important, but we're operating with the Department of Education in a far different way than we operate with any other agency. And now I'd like to draw your attention to a letter that was put in your box, and I know you haven't had a chance to take a look at it, so I think it's really important that we take a look at it. And it's a letter from an individual who testified yesterday at the Appropriations Committee meeting in favor of 104. And I just gave you my impression of what it is to serve on that committee. And here's an individual who has been in education since 1974 and has served in a department and a legislative capacity for 12 years. And what I'd like to do is to kind of go over that letter starting in the middle of the first page with you. As he says, my position and because what it illustrates to me, as the previous speakers talked about, is that we have a disconnect between the legislature and this particular agency. And it's not just about this administration. It's a systemic problem between the structure of that particular agency and the legislature. And he goes back over kind of 3 different administrations to illustrate that point. He says, my position in support of SF-104 is predicated on a genuine concern for the effective and efficient delivery of education and educational supports throughout Wyoming's 47 districts and nearly 100,000 students. My position is not one predicated on partisanship, for my position is neither a conservative nor a progressive one. I'd now like to turn to my remarks as to why I feel the current management system of the WDE and the role of the state superintendent as defined in legislation have been fraught with problems. My first example...
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Chairman Gingrey?
My point of order is this, that we're on a bill. If the good representative wants to bring impeachment on this floor, we have the time. Let's move straight to impeachment proceedings, and we can do them. We'll do the impeachment here. We'll move to a Senate trial, and we'll do it. But I think this is highly inappropriate to bring impeachment proceedings in the middle of a bill discussions. If she wants to bring the impeachment proceedings, she should bring them straight and forward.
Okay. Try to keep to the issue of...
Mr. Chairman, my point is that there's illustration of my previous point about the failure of our current system of having a superintendent of public education with all responsibilities as a legislator. That was supported yesterday in testimony that you have before you. And it's my understanding that this is exactly on point. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Throne.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify this, because I don't think the good representative from over the Hill actually mentioned this, this was testimony presented on the bill at the Appropriations Committee.
Thank you. Representative Connolly, if you could summarize that testimony without quoting it, it would probably be appropriate.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I'll do that. And you do have the full testimony in front of you. But what this individual did is went through three different administrations and talked about how we as a body passed legislation, okay, very specific legislation about the operations of education, right? And then how the superintendent thwarted the passage of that legislation. Right, didn't follow it and thwarted the intent of this legislative body. And then caused a standstill in terms of education, in terms of the vision. Our job is ultimately vision and then the implementation of that vision through the Department of Education. The system that we have in place right now isn't working. Okay? Regardless of the individual who is at the helm, the system that we have isn't working. Could be exacerbated by the examples that we know that have happened right now with the current administration. But the reality is we have a system that doesn't work as well as it can for the benefit of our children, as well as for us to meet our statutory obligations regarding education, which brings us back to my mind full circle, our obligations. Our obligations are the education of children. It's clear. We have it statutorily, we have it constitutionally, and we have it as an interpretation of the judiciary. This is hard. None of us want to ignore the 10 or 20 to 1 emails that we have that saying vote no. None of us want to be on the front page of the papers where it's saying, you know, the usurpation of power. None of us want this. But this is the best that we can do for our kids, for the benefit of education in the state. And I urge you to vote aye.
Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think this is the best we can do. I think there's a lot of things we could do differently than this whole thing came up. I'm standing on and against Senate File 104. I just want to remind the body who put the superintendent there. It was the people of this state that overwhelmingly voted and put her in there. And I think that my constituents all see this as a usurp of their power as a people. And I think we need to pay attention to that. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have as a body a very difficult decision in front of us. We chose to be here. We ran for election to represent the people, support the Constitution. I'm not going to regurgitate the Constitution to you because there are people who do that over and over. I'm not going to remind you of your oath that you took. But I am going to remind you that we are the body that oversees the actions of those individuals who are elected to the top positions in this state. And at those times when we find impropriety to question the actions of those people, those questions and those actions are most justified in this body. So we are totally on point to have this discussion here and now and be straightforward. And remember, this is the time that we put on our big boy and big girl pants, because this is where we take the facts, we make the decision relative to our charge given to us by the Constitution and to represent the state and the people, and make sure that we, as part of this government, keep it upright and between the lines. So let me break this down for you. A farmer who has a problem in a field will not wait until harvest to address that problem. That problem will get addressed immediately and forthwith to save the crop. That is why this matter is of the highest expediency. Do not be dissuaded or have the world pull over your eyes that we are moving at an extraordinary speed of rate. This requires our attention now and immediately. Thank you.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good and passionate debate so far, and I just wanted to sort of share a little bit about my own journey to ending up with my name on this bill, because it has been a long journey. And I know, I mean, there has been this discussion about, oh, this bill's moving fast track. You know, the only difference between this bill and any of the other hundreds of bills that we have heard and will hear this session is that we're hearing it before crossover. That's it. That's the only difference. And that's because of these other education-related bills that hang sort of in the balance depending on what we do here today. And so I think we do a disservice to our own constituents if we communicate to them that somehow this went through some extraordinary process, because there's been no suspension of rules. We have had the hearings on this bill as every other bill. It has had three readings in the other House, as is every other bill that will come before us from that side. And, in fact, last night when we had the hearing on this bill, we were there and we were able to hear from every single person that showed up that wanted to testify to the bill. And that's appropriate, and because this is a weighty issue, and we need to hear from people and we need to talk to people. But we do a disservice if we tell constituents and we tell the voters that we did anything less than that, because we haven't. We have done exactly what our process demands of us, and certainly I think most people on this bill will, or most people on this floor will tell you that it's a bill that has been in their thoughts and in their discussions, and comes not as a surprise as it hits the floor today. So, but as we get back to the merits of the bill, you know, there's been all this discussion about can we and can't we. I think certainly we can, but we do have to take that extra step, that extra question about should we. And that's really the key question. Should we make the restructuring of education as is proposed in this bill? And the answer to me to that question boils down really to this. Do we as a body have the ability and the right, and is it appropriate to demand that when we pass laws, when they're approved by the governor, and when they end up in our statute books, that they are followed and they are enforced and that they are implemented? And that's really the simple matter of what this bill comes down to, because in the areas of education, that has not been the case. And, you know, experience with education in this body really started 2 years ago when I found myself on the Select Committee on Education Accountability. I hadn't been on the Education Committee before that, and it was sort of a new world to me. And we went through that first interim, and we passed the Education Accountability Act last year, the second part of it. And what has just really struck me over the last 12 months since we passed that bill is the fact that at every step along the way, our efforts on the bill that we passed in this body, in the body down the hall that was signed into law, and our efforts to move to actually implement that bill has been undermined every step of the way by the Wyoming Department of Education. And, you know, you can sit here and go through example after example. I'd refer you to the Select Committee minutes from July of this last year. And just the discussion in there about all the parts of that bill that we passed that either weren't implemented, were ignored, or were misconstrued, that we passed a series of motions that were unanimous. I mean, I know this gets portrayed as a couple of big horses in the legislature leading the rest of us off to the water. But every single vote on these issues in the select committee has been unanimous and has been after thorough discussion and dialogue on the committee. But, you know, I take a couple of examples. And one, those of you who were here last year remember the discussion that we had on ACT testing versus PAS testing in the 11th grade. And it was a really a great area of debate on this floor. And we ended up, what we decided to do is we would forego PAS in the 11th grade and we would use ACT. And we thought it made sense. That's a test that kids actually have to do anyway, are doing anyway, and they're actually motivated to do well on it. And it was a whole lot cheaper than having a whole separate test under PAS that maybe had questionable validity. But we knew that we had to get permission from the U.S. Department of Education to make that change and to stay compliant with No Child Left Behind. We knew that at that time. And so there was a big discussion, well, did we just make it conditional, upon approval? How do we do it? And we kind of sawed the plank off behind us. We said, no, this is the way we as a state want to go. This is what we want to do. And as part of that bill, the superintendent was directed to immediately go to the U.S. Department of Education and get permission for us to do that. And interestingly, when we show up in July, we find out that when we left here in early March, that charge wasn't fulfilled, didn't get done. U.S. Department of Education wasn't approached. And for the remaining weeks of March, that didn't happen. And into April, that didn't happen. And all the way through April, that didn't happen. And not until 60 days after we had left was any sort of request sent to the U.S. Department of Education to allow us to do what we knew we had to get permission to do. And if you go back through that liaison report, there's an attachment to it, attachment 17, that is that letter. And what ended up going was a one-page letter. And it wasn't a letter that said, this is what we're trying to do for the state of Wyoming for education. And this is how it fits in. And here's how we're trying to take control of our own educational system. Instead, it was a one-page letter, and the key language in me is, I have been instructed by the legislature to request that, with no justification, no sort of effort to actually explain what we're doing. And not surprisingly, it was denied. And so here we are in July, at the July meeting, this critical policy that we had decided as a body had passed into law, and we're sort of still sitting there figuring out where we are. And so because the Department of Education had not done what we had asked and had not followed up on it in what we felt was an appropriate way, we got our consultants involved, and they item by item said, here's what you guys need to do to get it done. And they handed that off to the WDE. And then as we sit here now, months later, as far as I know, there are a number of items on that list that still haven't been done. And you can go item by item through the Education Accountability Act that we passed last year, and you see similar conduct, similar behavior, and similar frustration of what we passed into law. Last night, and this was part of the testimony that the good representative from Albany County was talking about, there was additional testimony that of three separate and independent programs where the legislature had given specific direction on either the expenditure of funds. One was actually expenditure of federal funds, and that those funds had been repurposed, meaning that they were put to a purpose that the legislature never approved, that no one ever came to us and asked us if it was appropriate to do. There was a letter that was submitted to us that talked about the superintendent meeting with new employees at WDE and saying, listen, this external accountability, it is a bad idea, and I'm going to do everything I can to undermine it. And that's in your box. You can look at that. And so it really is a simple question. Do we, as a body, have a right to demand that the laws that were passed be implemented? And what this bill does is it takes those regulatory functions, those administrative functions, you know, data collections, spending money, and it says, do what we ask to do. We're going to put it in a director, and you still have that policy position out there. You still have the superintendent with all of her powers under the Constitution. In fact, the bill gives her the ability to go to this new Department of Education and get anything she wants as far as data, as far as whatever she needs to make her case on public policy and public education. And so the question is, not are we thwarting the Constitution, but instead are we honoring the Constitution, and are we honoring our duty in asking that the laws that we pass be enforced?
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this brief, but I did want to share a couple quick concerns that I have that I don't know that they've been fully brought up yet. My concern with this bill is the fact that we're changing powers midstream in the middle of a term. We've heard that these problems have been going on for years and years and years. And if that's the case, then I ask why the need to suddenly change it now and not let it go into effect until after our current superintendent's term is over. I think that would make it clear to the people that it is not a personality conflict with one person. The only reason I can come up with as to why we would need to do something immediately right away is if the individual in that position has been derelict in their duty, and in that case, I think it would be our duty as a body to impeach them if they have done something so egregious that we have to take action now. That's my concern. I think that if this bill were to take effect after the current official's elected term is over, it would be clear that this is not about personality and it's about the department, and I would feel a whole lot better for it. And because that's not the case, I can't support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Winters. Speaker Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brothers and sisters of the 69th Wyoming Legislature, I'm sad. I'm sad to stand here and have to say the things that I have to say, and I am sad to be put in the position that I've been put in. Since the passage of Senate File 104 in the Senate, I've had the occasion to meet with employees of the Department of Education. They've asked me to keep their names confidential because they fear retaliation from that department. Many have retained counsel. But they've asked me to share information with you, and I've edited that information significantly. They tell me about an atmosphere of secrecy and intimidation that's toxic. They tell me about disregard of legislative dictates, particularly with our accountability program. They tell me about staff meetings where the superintendent announced to staff that she would do everything she could do to thwart attempts to implement external accountability as prescribed by the legislature. And you have a box or a letter in your box from an old friend of mine, somebody who I know and trust, who details that, and she details that at the risk of her employment. To be fair, the superintendent denies that these remarks were ever made. When the legislature passed into law last session the following, we said any unexpended, unencumbered, unobligated amounts within WDE general fund and federal fund programs, which have been designated by the agency for teacher-to-teacher programs, including amounts appropriated for the purposes of this act, shall be transferred to the education and testing account created under this footnote. Those employees and the superintendent, by her testimony in December, tell me that in clear defiance of that legislative mandate, the Department of Education simply changed the name of the program, added some sort of tie to special education, and ran it anyway. Well, I leave it to you to decide if those allegations are true, but I guess actions speak louder than words. I've observed lots of muddling of arguments and production of smoke screens which obscured the truth. and it's time for that muddling to end. Much has been said by political pundits whipped into a political frenzy by well-oiled political machines about constitutional rights and the right of the people to have their vote mean something. Make no mistake about it. We are not rendering those votes ineffective. We are augmenting those votes. You see, we truly stand on the shoulders of giants here because our founders knew that absolute and arbitrary power is destructive. They placed in Article 1 that absolute and arbitrary power over the lives, liberty, and property of freemen exists nowhere in a republic, not even in the largest majority. And so what did our founders do? They set up a system of checks and balances. They said that no one for a period of 4 years has absolute arbitrary power over anything. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters of the 62nd, I'm an originalist too. Article 7, Section 1 of our Constitution says, "The legislature shall provide for the establishment and maintenance of a complete and uniform system of public instruction, embracing free elementary schools for every needed kind and grade, a university with such technical and professional departments as the public good may require, and as the means of the state shall allow, and such other institutions as may be necessary." That provision has already been litigated. And in the Washakie decision, the Wyoming Supreme Court tells us, "These constitutional expressions leave no doubt the legislature has complete control of the state school system in every respect, including the division of state into school districts and providing for their financing." So you have to read the Constitution as a whole, and you have to know and understand what our legislative power is and what our legislative duty is. Well, what's the role of the superintendent? Well, the good chairman of judiciary tells us what it was. Article 7, Section 14 says, "The general supervision of the public schools shall be entrusted to the state superintendent of public instruction, whose powers and duties shall be prescribed by law." Well, what does that mean? That means that the legislature, us, the people sitting in this room, have the constitutional obligation to prescribe the powers and duties of the superintendent of public instruction. It's not the superintendent of public instruction, it's not the voters, it's not the people, it's our constitutional obligation. And if you pull out those green books that you have in the bookcase here, and you look in Volume 1, Article 7, it is absolutely clear. And if you look at the annotations of the cases, that's absolutely clear. Well, what does that mean? It means that we are the check to the superintendent's balance. We are the barrier to absolute and arbitrary power. It's our constitutional obligation to supervise and describe the duties of the superintendent of public instruction. It's our duty when the superintendent is not performing the duties we prescribed to find methods and fix the broken system. We increase and decrease the duties of the superintendent of public instruction all the time. We added educational accountability as a whole brand new duty for the superintendent of public instruction. After No Child Left Behind, we added testing as a duty of the superintendent of public instruction. We added the superintendent as an ex officio member of the University of the Board of Trustees. And last session, we added dyslexia programming and assessment as a part of the superintendent's duties. You know, a young man was given a family heirloom by his father. And his father said, "If you keep this heirloom in your family, you'll be prosperous for the rest of your life, and so will your family." And then the father died, and a jealous neighbor said, "Would you sell that heirloom for $1 million? And the son said, "Why, yes, I think I would." And he said, "Would you sell it for a dime?" And he said, "No, what do you think I am?" And he said, "I know what you are, I'm just haggling over the price." The truth of the matter is that we add and remove duties of the superintendent of public instruction all the time, because that is our constitutional charge. But until now, when we've had a major political machine spinning the argument, we never hear any objection about affecting the validity of votes of voters. I admit that this is a major change, but now is the time to make it, midterm, so that when people are running for office, they know exactly what the job duties are at the next general election. You see, there are 92 elected officials at the state level who are constitutionally charged with working on education issues. 90 of those elected officials are charged with complete control of the school system. That's 30 senators and 60 representatives. And the voters voted for us too. They sent us down here to fulfill our constitutional charge, which we swore to uphold, which was to support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Wyoming. And when people aren't doing their duty, you can't say it's the will of the voter that I'd not do my duty. That's not the constitutional charge of the superintendent of public instruction. That's our charge. Our constitutional duty is not defined by the spin of political spin machines or conventional wisdom. It's written down in black and white in the Constitution. And given that duty, it's incumbent upon us to ensure that our children are getting the best education we can afford. Remember, the Department of Education is a legislative creation. The superintendent or the governor did not create that department. They didn't create the jobs. We did. And if the way we are administering the department is not achieving the desired results, we need to change it. We have an official who we constitutionally supervise who, for whatever reason, is not performing the duties, and it's our obligation to fix it. Our voters sent us here to follow the Constitution and to perform those duties. When we took the oath, we swore to the voters to uphold the Constitution, and that trust extends to education. We have a duty to the public, to the voters, but most of all to the students who go to the schools in the state of Wyoming. We shouldn't shirk from that duty in the face of political spin.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman. I have great respect for all those who have spoken before me on this very important issue. And many important facts have already been brought to light. I believe it has been thoroughly established that the constitutionality of Senate File 104 is sound. Article 4, Section 11 and 12, Article 7, Section 14, make it very clear that it is within the purview of this body and the one across the building to set the parameters of these statewide elected positions. My reservations are not with the constitutionality of Senate File 104. They go deeper. And while it may sound hyperbolic to explain it in this way, they strike to the fundamental understanding of what it is to have a democratic republic. I reference three 17th century philosophers, and while I can't reference them by name, two are from our mother country across the ocean, and another one from where great timepieces are made. But they made it clear that every democracy is based upon a social contract, an understanding between a people, an electorate, and those whom they vote to lead them. And my contention is that when the people vote someone into place, for good or ill, they have established a contract with that person. And if another body, an outside body, such as ours, change the parameters of that elected position midterm, not just to a small degree, but to a great degree, orders of magnitude different, they have stepped between the contract of an electorate and the person whom they have elected. And that's the question before us today. Do the changes we are contemplating so fundamentally alter the job that we are describing that they violate that social contract? This bill, Senate File 104, does. Now, if this bill called for these changes to fall into place following the next election, my mind would be set at ease that we are not violating a principle. But I can tell you from my other life that many times, in times of great stress, we move so rapidly that we actually increase the damage that can be caused. And I believe that we are moving rapidly here. We are not fully contemplating a better way of moving forward. We're actually contemplating creating a vestigial office. We already have one in place here in the state of Wyoming. That's not an efficient way to move forward in state governance. With ever-tightening budgets, we are spending more, or the contemplating spending more, to create a new position. And if we had time to spend, I believe we could come to a better solution. Indeed, I spent this last weekend trying to do just that. I put maps out all over the bed and tried to figure out how we could create different electoral districts to maybe elect folks to the Wyoming Board of Education. And as I attempted to do something to that kind of magnitude, I figured out very quickly that we need time to figure out a good, efficient way forward. Now, if we had an opportunity to stop, an opportunity to think, if an amendment came forward that would ensure that this decision would fall into place following the next election, I believe it would do us all good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else? Representative Watt.
You know, right after the election, I started praying. And I started praying for the superintendent, not really knowing what all was going on. And I've kept praying. And then following my election, I started praying for this body. And I kept praying, and I will keep praying. You know, Saturday night, I finally came to a decision, and I knew then that it was the right decision for me because I have been praying so long and so hard about this. Yet, being a human being, there was just a tiny bit of doubt. But then I returned to my room, and I checked my Facebook, and there was a post on the Facebook that was written by my son. He wrote, "A great man once said these words to me, 'People can't make choices for you, only you have that right. You were raised with my values, such as knowing of right and wrong, how to take responsibility for your actions, to respect your elders, such as yes sir and no ma'am, to never let someone push you around no matter what the circumstances are, to live without fear, to stand for what you believe in, even if it means death, to help others when they need it and expect nothing in return. These are the things I've taught you so that you may pass this down to your children.'" After reading what my son wrote, all doubt of what I had to do was removed. You know, I've read a lot of the written material on this subject. I haven't read it all. I don't know if a person can live long enough to read all of it. But I can tell you one thing. It did not take me very long to get sick and tired of the finger pointing, the he said, she said, they did, they didn't. The finger pointing and the accusations need to stop. They need to come to an end. And they can end today. And I hope that we do end them today. I believe being short and to the point, this whole mess, as I see it, is simply personal. Somebody's got their toes stepped on and somebody didn't like it. I think that we need to, when we vote, vote no. I'm going to. And in my heart, because of my prayers, I know that no is the right vote for me.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is tough for everyone here on the floor. This isn't a pleasant position for anyone here to be in. But this body can be very proud what we have done here, now, in the past, for education in Wyoming. We've tried to fix educational problems with money. We spend right at the top pupil spending in the country. It really hasn't improved the scores. Now we're here to try to fix some problems that we've had. And I heard some of the supporters of this bill say for the last three superintendents. I'm just having trouble with why now with this. I've been trying to find a reason to vote for this bill. I've been looking for the reasons to vote for this bill. Frankly, the debate we're having right here, I haven't heard any specific things about what we can do to get me to vote for this bill. I hear all these things on issues that so-and-so's not doing this, she's not following the intent of the law. But this is kind of the way that the ones before operated. But we're doing this bill now to stop that. Again, I like the idea from the representative on the other side of the Owl Creek Mountains brought forward to add 2 years to this to make sure it's not personal, that it's about our policy. And I could support that. I could support this bill if we could get that on there. Right now, I don't think I can. You know, I think it's a tough position to be superintendent of public instruction. Who's your boss? Is the governor your boss? Are we her boss? I've read things in some of these reports. The Fed may very well be her boss, that she's had to juggle things around to meet federal requirements. You know, I think I do know who her boss is, and it's the people that elected her. And if they want to remove her from office, let them do it. And that's the way I'm going to vote on this bill.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As all of you know, I'm new to this body. As I was getting ready to come down here, I was trying to prepare, and I don't think anything could have prepared me for what I saw when I got here and saw this bill. I was shocked, quite frankly. So to find some answers, I went and found a past superintendent of public instruction, discussed this bill with them, and kind of got some of their feelings. This past superintendent fully agreed with these changes, went into detail about the difficulties of their own administration and how the division of powers and such between the legislature and the Department of Education made things within their own administration difficult. So then I asked the really hard question, or what I thought was the really hard question. I said, how would you react if this happened in the middle of one of your terms? And in paraphrasing the answer, the person responded by saying, I would absolutely accept it. It would allow me to get back to the kids and get away from dealing with all the administrative duties of this job. Kids were this person's primary focus, not all of the administrative details and duties that came along with the job. And so it's for that reason that I'm supporting this bill. Thank you.
Hey, is there anyone else? We do have some amendments. They either have to be acted on or withdrawn. I don't... Any amendments? Amendment number one is Representative Patton. We're going to take them in numeric order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was under the impression that you were going to work the bill with an explanation first, and as opposed to taking up the amendments first. I am prepared. I'll do whatever the chair and the body desires.
Representative Patton, there was nobody at the mics anywhere, so the next thing on my card here says we're supposed to look at amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to yield the floor to Chairman Teeters if for the explanation of the bill, unless...
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Teeters?
Yeah, I've been through the explanation of the bill.
Right.
And we will go ahead and move to amendments.
Mr. Chairman,
Patton.
I move the adoption of Amendment Number 1. It's on page 15, line 20. And I want you, I'm going to, I've tried to reserve myself, but I've got a couple of remarks that that I feel make me feel better, even if it takes a few minutes. Nobel Prize awards really have a bearing on what we're talking about. Five of the six categories of Nobel Prize awards, the most recipients of five of them are from the United States. Only one of the six are we in second place. That was in literature. That has a bearing because it speaks to what we are as a people. We're the only nation out of the most populated four nations in the world, the only one that provides for a free, uniform educational opportunity to every child that is born and raised in our great nation. China, India, Indonesia, Brazil, of the other four, not one of them is in that competition, and not one of them is even in second place on Nobel Prize recipients. I can't help but smile when I listen to some of the history. I'm glad that you haven't referred to me. I wasn't here in 1917. I was here in 1965, 1967. And in 1967, this legislature, both the House and the Senate.
Excuse me, Representative Patton, we're on the amendment here.
Yes, sir, we are. This legislature moved to change the education laws in the state of Wyoming, and we abolished the county superintendents who were elected. So my point that I get to there is that we're not a failed nation. We are not a failed state. But the concern that surrounds this issue surrounds it because we're passionate about education. We care. And a part of that care has to do in 1985 when it was pointed out through an audit that one of the real critical problems of education in the state of Wyoming was the delineation of the authority between the State Board of Education, the Department of Education, and the State Superintendent of Education. We are now dealing with exactly that. If this measure passes, and it may, That action of 1985, that suggestion of 1985, may at least get some kind of a response with the application of the two amendments that I have, number one and number two. What I'm here to talk about is the governance that may occur following our actions today. The governance of our education system between the State Department, between the director, between the State Board of Education is also at stake. So the proposal is that the Department of Education will be the Board of Education will be in the position of making a request for the resources and assistance in completing and fulfilling the obligations of the State Board of Education, which is the instrument that does reflect upon all of the policy matters that surround graduation, the curriculum, and so forth. So the number one and number two are geared to the response, I think, of our obligation to fulfill the responsibilities of the governance of the state, which is our responsibility. I stand ready for any questions.
Okay, members of the House, we're on amendment number one. Is there any discussion or debate on amendment number one? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe this is a good amendment. Ultimately, it would be our hope and desire that that relationship would exist, and I think that this amendment codifies that position, and I would call for the question.
Question's been called on amendment number one. All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Those say no.
No.
That amendment has been adopted. Now we're on committee of the whole amendment number two. Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To try and make sure that the State Board of Education doesn't end up being the fulcrum point of any kind of a contest, and trying to get that deliberation and authority vested in a manner in which the agenda of the State Board of Education is a product and in response to the wills and wishes of the members that make up the State Board of Education, I think that we should take the director and the state superintendent and put them on the same level field. And so this amendment suggests, as you'll see on line 26, line 17, and the director of the State Department of Education, the state superintendent and director shall be ex officio members, non-voting. That at least puts the State Board of Education in the position of its resource and its capabilities and responsibilities in being able to be fulfilled. Move the adoption of the amendment.
Any discussion? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you. But once again, I think this will help clarify the positions, and I think it will make sure we get the input of both those people on the board, and I view it as a friendly amendment.
Question on the amendment's been called. All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number two, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. That amendment number two is passed. Now we're on committee of the whole amendment number three. Representative Somers.
Mr. Chairman, members of the House, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3 to Senate File 104 and ask for your favorable consideration. One of the primary concerns I hear from the public regarding Senate File 104 is that it further centralizes power of the governor and does nothing to make the office less politicized. What this amendment does is make the State Board of Education the body that appoints the new director of the Wyoming Department of Education, which pulls that decision back into the hands of a body of individuals committed to education rather than in the hands of one man. However, this amendment would allow the governor to terminate the director and would also allow the State Board of Education the ability to terminate the director based upon a vote of no confidence. I believe this amendment would establish some checks and balances in the system, which should allow the State Board of Education, the Governor's Office, and the Wyoming Department of Education to all row in the same direction with respect to K-12 education in Wyoming, instead of perpetuating a system where extreme tension is the norm. You will find on your front desk a handout showing how other states handle appointment or election of their head administrator of education. That's labeled with my House District 20. And you will see that around 24 states have a State Board of Education which appoints or recommends a director. Once again, I stand on and for Amendment Number 3, but remain opposed to Senate File 104. I would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Barlow. Neither one of us.
Okay, I'm ready to go. Yeah.
All right. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge some caution on this amendment, and I specifically because I believe we're kind of getting the cart ahead of the horse. I have a bill, and hopefully it will be coming out very soon, that will propose that we elect the State Board of Education. And I don't believe we should make this sort of change until we've had the opportunity to consider whether or not we elect that board, to have an appointed board by the governor and then have them have the ability to hire and fire that person really doesn't get to the end result, which is trying to diffuse authority. So I think we should consider that idea, but I think it should be considered with that piece of legislation, and I would urge you to vote no.
Now, Representative Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, members, I rise in support of this amendment, and as having a unique perspective on this, coming from one of the boards that actually has the ability to appoint their director and the state veterinarian and that of the Wyoming Livestock Board. And it is a unique opportunity for the people to have the greatest vested interest, i.e. the board, in the case of the Wyoming Livestock Board, a board of producers, to have policy-making authority over the executive who implements that. Now, I will grant you that there is challenge in that because a board does not have the administrative skills often. But this takes care of that with the ability of the governor in this scheme. So I would urge you to consider this strongly. In deference to the other options that may come along, we can work those out. But this is something that people understand, that they have a level of representation by the very people who they are represented in this system. Look at the makeup of the State Board of Education, and I think you will see so many folks being represented there that this is a positive addition, irrespective of whether another opportunity comes to us for consideration. So I would urge you to consider this strongly in your consideration of 104. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this particular amendment doesn't address one of the major questions we have. We're talking about the congregation of power within the executive branch. One of the wise decisions made early on within our state government was to ensure that we had a diffused power within the executive branch, to make sure that we don't fall the way that some other governments have gone and have an extremely powerful individual in charge. It is a bit the cart before the horse. Until we find a method by which we can elect those people to the board, this is the wrong direction to go, at least for now. There is merit to the idea, but I believe we need to move forward very carefully in regards to this particular idea. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question for the bringer of the amendment, and that is, what is the difference if the governor appoints the State Board of Education to insert them as the one who can decide on who is the director of education versus the governor choosing someone? I mean, it all still leaves the power within the executive branch, within the governor's office specifically.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, the one thing you have to understand about most state, I think the State Boards of Education appointments, is it's a fairly lengthy term, I believe 6 years, so it spans two governors. So, yes, you could have one governor for two terms that kind of controls the whole board, but all in all, it is spread out over a long time, the appointment. It could be by two different governors. And it is a multiple-person board, so you get a larger perspective. I believe those boards are appointed based upon both parties, so you have a broad perspective, and so I believe you'd have a better perspective that by which to appoint that position. Thank you.
Any further discussion on Amendment Number 3? Or Chairman Harvey.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, according to the bill, doesn't the Board of Education provide the names? Don't they come up with their best three candidates already in the bill that the Board of Education is involved and heavily so in the decision-making process as to who this director of education would be? And then he just chooses from their recommendation, and I would assume that they'd put forward three really good names of people who were qualified to direct education.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, she's correct. I just think this would be one step back, and if what she says is correct, then this isn't that far of a leap. One last point I would like to make is we in Wyoming have had good judgment in electing our governors, but that may not always be the case. I was visiting with a school administrator from my district who had previously worked in the state of Bears, Bulls, and Cubs, and this individual told me that this state had a great education system under a director of education who was appointed by a state board of education. And tell the governor of this state, the one with the bad hair, convinced legislators to allow the director to be appointed by the governor. The administrator for my district stated education went downhill after the director became an appointed position of the governor. One bad apple can have a tremendous effect, and I believe this amendment reduces that chance. Thank you.
Any other discussion on Amendment 3? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3, please say aye. All opposed, say no.
No.
Amendment 3 fails. Okay, now we're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question on the bill has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that bill number Senate file 2105, 104, do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Senate file 104 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All the ayes, please stand up. I've been asked to ask the senator in the doorway to move. So Senate File 104 has passed the House. The next item on the it passed the Committee of the Whole. Failing to read my own crib cards here. Next bill Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, please move Bill 175 to the bottom of the list, and it'll reappear tomorrow.
This one easy, or I don't know. Well, you're the boss. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole Rise and Report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 98, recommended do pass. House Bill 61, amended. And recommended do pass. House Bill 62, recommended do pass. House Bill 133, amended, and recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Motion prevailed. Senate File 104, amended, and further amended. Recommended do pass. And that is signed, Representative Madden, Chairman.
Chairman Madden.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Chairman Madden. We're on that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 155. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 6, Office of Consumer Advocate Revisions, ayes 25, noes 5. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 156. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 19, Hospital Districts-Elections, ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 157, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 37, Office of Consumer Advocate-Revisions 2. Ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 158. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 39, Uniform Adult Guardianship Jurisdiction Act. Ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message number 159, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 53, partition action subject to subdivision laws, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 160, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 75, Honor Farm Horse Program. Ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 161. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. Ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 162. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 87, proof of motor vehicle insurance. Ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 163. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 105, school capital construction. Ayes 28, noes 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 164. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 83, Medicaid fraud recovery. Ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're in that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 65, Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye. Representative Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, and Wallace. Signed, Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill number 66, Municipal Solid Waste Facilities, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Burkhart, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, Wallace, and Representative Escobel was excused. Signed, Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 120, Game and Fish Violation Restitution, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchings, Yagi, Piperinen, excused with Representative Crone, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 152, Vehicle Accident Reporting, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yagi, Larson, Laux, McKim, and Dave Zwanzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, the Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 192, Cancer Awareness License Plates, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Larson, Laux, and McKim. Those who voted no, Representative Yagi and Representative Dave Zwanzer, and is signed by Representative Dave Zwanzer, Chairman. House Bill number, Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 15, Violent Injuries Reporting Requirements, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Harvey, Kasparik, Throne, and Wilson. Those who voted no, Representatives Green and Reeder. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 146, Athletic Trainers Licensure, respectfully reports the same back to the House with a recommended that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparik, Reeder, Throne, and Wilson. Signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Representative Burkhart.
Privilege of the floor.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In the North Gallery, we have two of Carbon County's newest county commissioners, Lindy Glode and Sue Jones. Please stand up.
Welcome to the House. We are at that order of business of saluting the female basketball team at that university we're constitutionally obligated to fund. Representative Blake. Thank you, Representative Blake. We're at that order of business of committee announcements. Chairman Semlak.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, January 24th at 8 a.m., room H11, to hear the following bills, House Bill 155, Burn Order Violations Restitution, House Bill 156, Movement of Livestock in Emergency Situations, House Bill 126, Agricultural Operations, House Bill 109, Interstate Shipment of State Inspected Meats. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee, Number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife and Cultural Resources, will meet at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning in room 302. To go over House Bill 136, Game and Fish Licenses, Fees 2, House Bill 157, Game and Fish License Residency, House Bill 137, Game and Fish Indexing of License Fees, and House Bill 131, Game Fish Definition.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment in H-10 for considerations of the following bills, House Bill 130, House Bill 177, and House Bill 208.
Vice Chairman Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Labor Committee, Number 10, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment today, Wednesday, January 23rd, in room H-17 to discuss House Bill 203, Health Benefit Exchange Study and Select Committee.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, 10 minutes after adjournment, in H-17 to hear four bills, House Bill 161, Outdoor Advertising Fees, House Bill 179, Failure to Observe Closed Roads, House Bill 189, Repeal of the Real ID, and House Bill 182, Determination of Highway Rights-of-Ways on Federal Lands.
Brothers and sisters, if you would look on Representative Reeder's desk, there's a bronze that's been commissioned for the 62nd Wyoming Legislature. It's anybody who wants to purchase one, they're available. That's legislators, people off the street, anybody, as long as they're still available. They will be at a discounted price until February 1st. After that, they'll be sold at the gallery price until gone. Brothers and sisters, today was a perfect example of what democracy looks like. It's a messy, mythical critter, but I can't say how proud I am to be a member of this body and participate in these debates. With that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, general file for tomorrow, for those who care. I don't see very many that care. Okay, here we go. 175, 197, House Joint Resolution 3, House Joint Resolution 4, House Bill 53, 84, 117, 172, 195, 128, 85, 150, 63, 65, 66, 120, 152, 192, 15, 146, 147, 93, and 94. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, January 24th, 2013.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned until tomorrow, January 24th, 2014, at 10 a.m.